We will continue our discussion of mineral ratios and the importance of the ratios. Really, the ratios are another example of what's called system principle. General systems theory states that if you just know the parts of a system, you can't figure out the whole system. And unfortunately, this is what happens too often in medicine. You know, you have people who specialize in stomach problems and lung problems and neurological problems, and often they have trouble putting it all together. Because the human body is a system, it's an integrated system, it's a self-regulating system, which is a special type of system in systems theory. And what is important, and it's a theorem of systems theory, is that if you know some behaviors of the whole system and some of the parts, you can figure out the rest of the parts. That's the other part of systems theory. So anyway, the things we've been talking about, the stress theory of disease, the mineral system, the oxidation rate, and some other concepts that we're going to talk about, like layers of adaptation, preferred minerals, those are general systems concepts applied to the human body. And what they allow you to do is, without knowing all the parts, they allow you to figure out what's going on and take proper action. When you just study vitamins and minerals, for example, in nutrition, those are just parts. You know, do you need more vitamin A? Do you need more vitamin C? How about this? How about that? You go nuts. When you have the behaviors of the whole, which is these ratios, is a big part of it, then you can fit the other things in. So the concept of the importance of ratios, there are five ratios that we use. That's really the only ones that I pay attention to. There are some others, but they're not as important. The calcium, magnesium, the first four are they're all about the electrolytes. Electrolytes are calcium, magnesium, sodium, potassium, and phosphorus. And they are the ratios between some of those numbers that are so important. Okay. Now, related to that question is the next one, which is, why do we look at the whole chart, not just the mercury level, say, or the aluminum level, or something else? Well, that's, again, a systems idea. And it's very tempting, and unfortunately the education in medicine is not holistic. It's not, you know, and in all the healing schools, I haven't found the naturopathic schools to be much better, is to look at parts. But when you look at this chemistry, this is biochemistry, we want to look at the whole system. So that's the whole hair chart. And we do not want to focus on one number, because you'll miss the forest for the trees, so to speak. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't deal with the mercury or the aluminum, but you will get a lot better understanding of why the person has it and what to do about it if you will look at the entire chart. That's a retraining process, but it is an important one. The electrolytes are the most important. Learning hair analysis takes a while, and there are a number of materials around, and actually that's another question, is how do you learn this? These tapes may be helpful. They're books, and there'll be more material coming out. Analytical Research Labs offers some seminar tapes that are older, but they're still good, and their interpretation plans explain a lot of things too. Anyway, and also on my website, there are many articles. There are about 50 articles, and I'm always putting more up there. In learning this, the electrolytes are most important, and if you want to learn, pay attention first to the first four numbers, calcium, magnesium, sodium, potassium, and if you want to throw in phosphorus there too. You can learn a tremendous amount from that, and then you can fit the other things in. But it is important to look at the whole chart and not to just focus on one mineral, because that isn't how the body works. That's the main reason. One thing doesn't just exist in isolation, ever. Okay. Well, I just answered the next question, which was, how does one learn about hair analysis? I've written a text on Dr. X's work, Nutritional Balancing and Hair Mineral Analysis. It's comprehensive. It doesn't go into program design. That's coming later. There was just plenty of material to do without that. And There are other tapes and books and articles, as I mentioned. There may be seminars at times. There are some people around the country doing seminars on this. I don't know how good they are. I haven't personally gone to them or been involved with those people in a while. It's a process of just doing the tests, and you learn after a while. If anyone wants to learn more, they can contact me. I may be able to help you with other specific resources for learning this. Okay. Next concept. Next question. What are preferred minerals? This is another systems concept. Preferred minerals. The idea of preferred minerals is that enzymes in the body, all the enzymes, many enzymes involve a mineral. The mineral is used as a catalyst. It may be part of the enzyme. Sometimes it's an inhibitor of the enzyme. In other words, it's involved with enzymes. Often enzymes consist of proteins with minerals. And the way it works is there is a preferred mineral in each enzyme. That is, the enzyme is designed to work with a mineral. For example, zinc, at least 50 enzymes. Magnesium, about 500. They're specific ones. You know, copper is involved in superoxide dismutase. It's involved in lysyl oxidase, I think. There's a whole bunch of each one has specific enzymes. Now, that's the preferred mineral. If the preferred mineral is not available, however, the body can use other minerals. And you get the less preferred mineral, which is usually a toxic metal. So, for example, and a lot of this is determined by the structure of the mineral. So, for example, cadmium is located below zinc in the periodic table. It's right below it. And so cadmium will substitute for zinc. Basically, the molecule, the atom of cadmium, looks a lot like zinc in terms of its electron structure, you know. And so it will fit. But, of course, it doesn't work quite right. It's not the preferred mineral. An analogy that was used by the late Dr. Henry Schroeder, who wrote some interesting books about minerals, is it's like if there's supposed to be a certain gear in a little cog in a machine, and you don't have that one, so you substitute one that's a little bigger, say. Well, it will work, but the machine will run faster. You know what I mean? It won't run at the right speed because it's in there. The other analogy I like to use is if you, let's say the fan belt breaks on your car, well, if you're in a remote area, what you might do is you might take the belt off that you're wearing and you might wrap it around and tie it on, and it might work for a while. It won't work quite as well. It might slip and all that. But that's exactly what your body does. Your body keeps you going. And the way it does it is through this concept of preferred minerals. And if it can't get what it needs because your diet is deficient, that's the usual reason, you know, you're low in zinc, you're low in chromium, manganese, whatever it is, then the body picks up toxic metals from the environment. They're all there. They're even in our food and everywhere. And it keeps going. The only problem is, like replacement parts on a car that are not the real parts, after a while, the whole thing starts to fall apart. It just won't work very well. The enzyme might work at 50% or 10%. But it's enough to keep you alive. So that is the concept of preferred minerals. It's a very, very important one. The other reason it's important, which is our next question, has to do with correcting that process. Really what we have to do is we have to remove all those less preferred minerals, I was going to say unpreferred, but they're less preferred, and replace them with the factory originals, so to speak, the real ones. And that process takes time. And the reason it takes time is because your body has to go the whole time. In other words, if you replaced all of them at once, it would be sort of like trying to fix, I don't know, all the broken bricks on a house at once. The house would probably fall down. So the body doesn't do that. It fixes one area, and then it moves on to another, and then it moves on to another. And that's a very important thing to understand because it helps explain another concept, which is the time factor in healing. Whenever someone tells me that, oh, you know, I just took this vitamin or this treatment and I'm all better, well, I know then that they're not, either they weren't that sick or they got a little better. They got better enough that they don't feel it anymore, and they feel like they're all better, but they're not really all better. Because to replace the toxic metals with the good ones takes a while, and I'm talking a couple of years. Anything less than that is just surface stuff, which is good and important, and often you can get rid of a disease that way, but you're not really doing it. It takes several years to work through and replace these things, which are actually part of the structure of your body. The toxic metals become part of the structure of the body in the enzymes, in the enzyme binding sites. So that's a very important systems principle that helps explain why healing takes a while, why people have to stick with it, and it brings us to our next question. The next question is, what are layers of adaptation? This is another systems principle. And the principle basically is that the body gets sick in layers. We get sick in, we adapt and compensate, and it goes on and on for years. For example, it can happen, of course, in structural, and chiropractors know this, that, you know, you can have layers. You fall, when you were five, you fell on your head, and you knocked your neck out of balance, and then when you were seven, you fell off your bike, and, you know, you hit your shoulder. And, you know, each of these things twists and unbalances your structure a little bit more. And then because you were tough, you didn't notice it. But then by the time you're 30 or 40, you end up with all kinds of chronic neck pain and back pain and on the rest. And the reversal is the cure. You have to reverse it. You can't just fix it all at once because there were layers. Well, the same is true of your chemistry. What happens? Well, you know, first of all, you might have been born weak because your mother was deficient in zinc, say, and your mother had too much copper, so you're born high in copper. Then maybe you got vaccinated when you were two. Well, they introduced some mercury and aluminum in the vaccines. Then, you know, you had a little emotional trauma and it used up more nutrients when you were three. Maybe you fell or something. And it, you know, all the trauma uses up a lot of nutrients. Then you started eating junk food because it was the thing to do, so you became more deficient in manganese, and then the body had to replace the manganese with some cadmium or something else that was sitting around. And on, you get these chemical insults to your body over the years, over and over, more and more things. Then you were exposed to some pesticides, which also can replace certain hormone receptor sites. And so anyway, on and on. So the reversal, and these are called layers of adaptation. The body adapts and compensates. So when we go to get well, we have to undo all that. And it is a lengthy process because of that. It takes a couple of years, easily a couple of years, because you can't do it all at once. The stuff is literally layered in there. And along with those layers, by the way, of nutrients and toxins are infections. You know, you got an ear infection when you were five, and they gave you antibiotics, which killed the bacteria but didn't really get rid of the bad tissue because the antibiotics, that's all they do. Plus, then you've got the antibiotics in your liver, you know, the residue. And so then that alters some enzymes right there and on. So you've got the medical drugs, you know, those are another class of toxins. You've also got radiation exposure. All these things are acting on your enzyme systems. So when we go to fix it, we undo the layers and you go through your layers. And one of the nice things about the hair analysis is it's a way to observe the layers. You can see it. You'll see. All of a sudden, you're in slow oxidation. All of a sudden, cadmium comes out. Then that stops and copper stops coming out. Then mercury starts coming out. Then you go into fast oxidation for a while. And it's this sort of, we just guide the body and follow the body. It's very similar in that way to some other sciences like chiropractic, where they do that, body work, even some homeopathy work, where you just follow the body through it's like emotional release work. They do that sometimes. Well, we are doing it with our chemistry. We just follow the body back through those layers, and there is light at the end of the tunnel. I can tell you that. For a long time, I didn't think so. I was just undoing layers of my own stuff, and it's like, wow, does this ever end? Well, yes, it does. Now, again, there's probably more stuff, but the deeper and the more pathological stuff does go. Now, one of the implications of this, which is very important, is that we do not force toxic metals out of the body. And the reason I bring this up is I hear it all the time from holistic doctors. They get a hair analysis or a urine challenge test or something, a DMPS challenge, and they say, oh my gosh, you're high in mercury, we've got to get it out of there. And that's all they think about. What they don't know, and they don't realize probably, is that we don't know what layer that mercury's at. You know, the mercury may be the top layer, it may be the fifth layer down or the tenth layer down. And if you start forcing metals out, you can cause problems because it's in there for a reason. It's part of the structure. It is supporting the body in strange ways. And the toxic metals do support your adrenals. That's one of the things. Manganese, iron, chromium, aluminum, lead, cadmium, mercury, they do. They support various glandular activities. I don't say they're good, but it's sort of like having your belt being the fan belt in the car. I mean, it's not a great thing, but it's better than no fan belt at all. So I find that people have these side effects when they start just pumping themselves full, for example, of chelating agents. You're back in the parts mentality. You're not in the whole systems mentality. The mercury will come out, I guarantee it, if you will follow the body, and especially if you use the saunas, but it'll come out at its own pace and its own order, which is a lot safer. I've had a number of people, one other practitioner I know has seen several hundred people damaged. That is, they're worse from these chelating agents because they release the metals from storage and the body can't get rid of them correctly and they resettle in more vital organs. So similar to other practices such as chiropractic, where I know they have the same philosophy, they may see five things wrong with you, but they don't try to fix them all at once because they know that there's a certain order and we just get started and then we can get to them as you get to the deeper layers. So that's the concept of the layers of adaptation. What are defenders in hair analysis? Well, this is sort of related to that, but it's another interesting concept, and that is the idea that the body, again, tries to keep you in balance any way it can. And because of the mineral system, some minerals may be retained to protect or to defend the levels of other minerals. I will give you some examples. Copper is highly toxic, and when it's in excess. It's an essential mineral, but when there's too much, it's very toxic. On the hair tests of slow oxidizers, many times one will see an elevated zinc level above the normal. Well, there's not too much zinc in our environment, and so most people do not have too much zinc in their bodies unless they're taking an astronomical amount. What's going on here? Well, zinc will protect you from the effects of copper. That's well known. It's a copper antagonist. And so most slow oxidizers, if not all of them, have elevated copper. It may be hidden, the concept of hidden copper, but most people have too much. So the zinc may go up to protect a person from the effects of copper. And so we don't try to lower that zinc. We don't say, oh my gosh, that's too high, we got to get rid of the zinc or something like that. No, you want to recognize that that is normal. That's a compensation. It'll go away when the copper comes down. Another example is that zinc lowers sodium. That's one of the effects in the mineral system. Well, in some cases where the sodium is low or the sodium-potassium ratio is low, the body will lower zinc to raise sodium. In other words, zinc lowers sodium and the sodium is too low, so the body will lower the zinc to raise the sodium. Now, again, the temptation would be, if we don't think of it in systems terms, gee, the zinc is too low, we have to raise it. No, you don't want to do that because the person will get worse. The sodium will go down as a result of raising zinc, and they'll get worse. So in fact, we have to realize that there is this idea of defenders and that minerals can defend the levels of other minerals. That's part of the mineral balancing system, the mineral system of the body. The next question is, do we really need to bother with all this fancy stuff? Why not just use chelating agents for toxic metals and give the minerals that are low? This is a very common way that people use hair analysis. and it's used by many doctors. There is reasons. The main reason is this systems concept. Another systems principle that we haven't talked about is energy. Energy is a common denominator of health. If the energy of the body is good, the toxic metal removal and the restoration of health goes easily. If the energy is poor, nothing much happens. Things go very slowly, doesn't matter what you do. I mean, the obvious extension of the principle is if someone's dead, you can feed them as much chelators as you want, won't make any difference. So these agents all require energy to work with. The nutrients require energy. All the techniques require energy, chiropractic, everything. So this is a very important principle of energy. And what we accomplish by balancing the mineral system is improving the energy. The enzymes all have an optimum rate at which they operate. And balancing the oxidation rate, which is the same as balancing the yin and yang qualities, increases energy efficiency. It's like pedaling a bicycle in the correct gear. It's like running your car in the right gear. Anyone who's familiar with these things knows that if you're in the wrong gear, energy or power output goes way down. So a lot of the success of the program depends on balancing the energy of the body, improving it, and keeping it that way as it changes, altering the program. And when you do what's called replacement therapy, which is just to replace minerals that are low, it often doesn't work. And when you use chelating agents to force metals out, you'll force some out, and sometimes you'll get some results, but you won't really go very deep. And you'll do much better by doing the nutritional balancing science with the hair analysis. Next question, why are saunas particularly helpful? They are helpful because they combine, and this is new, by the way. I've only incorporated this in the last year and three quarters or so. It started with a sort of an accident where I discovered a simple sauna made out of three heat lamps, which is very powerful and very excellent sauna. And I found on myself and subsequently on many patients that it combines about 10 elements that improve this program, that go very nicely. The sauna is particularly good for slow oxidizers because it heats the body. These folks run cold. They're not able to mount fevers very well. Their bodies are low energy because they're running sluggishly, and they have a hard time speeding up no matter what we do. Saunas increase circulation. They decongest the internal organs. They're very calming and relaxing. They inhibit the sympathetic nervous system, which is a key to healing, because the sympathetic nervous system inhibits the immune system and it inhibits elimination, the organs of elimination. The hair analysis is a good way to monitor how much sauna therapy a person can take. Most people, it's very safe, but if there are a lot of electrolyte imbalances, we may want to start with less, like a four lows pattern on a hair analysis or a very low sodium-potassium ratio. Or a fast oxidizer usually needs less time in a sauna. And the hair analysis can be used to monitor what's going on with sauna therapy. Often we can tell why a person's having a healing reaction, for example, and this can help to offset the reaction. The two work very nicely together, the mineral analysis and the sauna therapy. And so that's why I'm incorporating it. I haven't seen any better. The sauna therapy is also extremely cost-effective, safe, and powerful. The next question is another topic which one could write a whole book about. It's a fascinating topic. And that is, how can you tell emotional and behavioral conditions from a mineral analysis? It seems, again, kind of strange, since we're not doing a psychological assessment on anyone. And yet, you can tell a tremendous amount of information. Why? Because the emotions and behavior are often related to glandular activity. There are emotional patterns with fast and slow oxidation, for example. Depression and apathy and lethargy, these are often related to slow oxidation. People are sluggish, they're tired. When the calcium goes way up, they get what's called a calcium shell, and it affects the emotions. The opposite is true of the fast oxidizers. They tend to be anxious, nervous, paranoid, aggressive, extroverted. And then the individual minerals settle in various areas of the brain related to various emotional and behavioral things. Toxic metals are extremely neurotoxic, and some of their effects are well known. For example, that the Mad Hatters of Alice in Wonderland were real and associated with people who became mercury poisoned. So this is a huge topic. There are feminine minerals and there are masculine minerals. Two chapters of my book are devoted to the psychological and emotional aspects related to mineral analysis. Another question is, how can one tell autonomic balance from a hair analysis? Because again, we say that this is possible. By the way, when I started all this work, I didn't think any of this was possible. I was studying with Dr. Paul Eck, whom I respected. He's a very brilliant man. But he started talking about some of this stuff, and I just thought, this has got to be nuts. And so fortunately, I was on my own. I had my own practice. And I was able to test out all these ideas. And I would see people with high iron, and I would say, do you get angry? And they would act surprised and say, yes, how'd you know that? And so forth. And I would see people with a copper, and I'd ask them about their emotions. Copper is highly associated with exaggerated emotions, mood swings, panic attacks, things like this. And it proved out. I found he was correct. And that was before I understood very much in terms of physiology. But it worked. I was quite amazed. So another thing is the autonomic balance. Now, there are actually two things about this. Fast oxidizers, which is the alarm stage of stress, tend to be in a sympathetic state because the sympathetic state is the alarm reaction, the fight or flight reaction. And slow oxidizers tend to be in the parasympathetic state, the exhaustion stage. Now, it's important to know there are two parasympathetic states. There's a healthy parasympathetic, which you won't see very often. The reason you won't see it is because those people don't tend to come as patients because they're very healthy. The healthy parasympathetic is a resting state. These people are just content and happy. That's the idea of parasympathetic. They're not in a fight or flight mode. What you see more of, well, almost exclusively, is what I would call an unhealthy parasympathetic state, which is most slow oxidizers. And these people are really, the more proper term would be a burned out sympathetic type. In other words, the reason they're sluggish and tired and exhausted and slow oxidizers is not because they're content and relaxed. They may be that way a little, but the main reason is that they're exhausted. They've exhausted their sympathetic system. They can't fight or flight anymore. And they go into parasympathetic basically by default. And by the way, this has been confirmed with some of the other measurements of autonomic balance, such as heart rate variability, where most people show up this way in this sort of depleted state, because that's what it is. It's a depleted kind of state. There is also another autonomic indicator on a hair analysis that works very well. It's nice to have. And that's what's called autonomic dominance, which is a mental tendency or personality tendency. And this is indicated by the sodium-potassium ratio. And for example, many people, although they are slow oxidizers, They're still fighting and flighting. They're still in a sympathetic mode mentally. Some people would say it's a mind without a body. The mind is still racing along. The body has had it. And these people are sometimes called sympathetic dominant, meaning their personality tendency. They're not in a sympathetic state. They're burned out. They're exhausted. They're in a parasympathetic state, but their personality tendency is to continue to run around, continue to worry a lot. They're not relaxed at all. And that's indicated by a high ratio of sodium to potassium, say over 6 to 1, certainly, and by a low potassium level, very low, like 1 or 2, or maybe up to 3. And so that's another type of indicator. There are people who are parasympathetic dominant, meaning their personality tendency is more the parasympathetic. And again, you won't find many of the healthy ones, but you do find an unhealthy parasympathetic personality type who are people who will not fight at all, will not fight or flight at all. They are in sort of a give-up mode. And usually they have a low sodium-potassium ratio, or they can have a low sodium-potassium ratio, say less than 2. And that's another, sometimes that's a personality a type, or even a much lower one. These are not hard and fast rules, but they are indicators that are sometimes helpful. So there are autonomic indicators just from a hair mineral analysis, and those are useful things to know about a person because it may affect the way that you treat them or handle them, the way that they can get well. Okay. Now, another question is, isn't it better to just correct things with foods and, natural methods other than using synthetic mineral supplements like chelated minerals? I'm asked that often. Our observation is that the synthetic, they're not really synthetic, but that these chelated minerals, which are basically cooked with amino acids to form the chelate, they're amino acid chelates. And then there are some fancier ones, the aspartates and orotates and citrates, things like that. That these are more effective than a lot of the whole food supplements. The reason for this is that we can regulate the dosage, and the dosage can be quite a bit higher in terms of how much mineral people are getting. And since we are using the minerals not only to replenish minerals, that is one of the functions, but we're using it to shift the balance of the minerals, then the dosages are important, and sometimes the higher dosages are very important, especially with certain patterns. Like when the calcium is very, very high, calcium and magnesium, we use quite a bit of calcium and magnesium. It's being lost is what's happening. And we use it as a sympathetic inhibitor because calcium, magnesium, and zinc will help inhibit the sympathetic nervous system. These people are often very driven and anxious. When they're is a four lows pattern, the first four numbers low, calcium, magnesium, sodium, and potassium, also called four low electrolytes. Again, a lot of calcium, magnesium, and zinc are often needed, and sometimes other minerals. So actually, the chelated minerals for this purpose, and in conjunction with, the rest of a program, which includes lifestyle and diet, certainly, works very well, very well. Many people also ask, well, how does this differ from other people's nutrition? Well, it differs a lot, and beginning to do this work, you'll see that, because there are some nutrients that everyone thinks are wonderful that we may not give someone. For example, fast oxidizers, fast metabolizers, I sometimes use those words interchangeably, neither of them are very exact in their meaning. I actually like the word yin and yang better, but that's not a Western term. But anyway, fast oxidizers, according to our criteria, they need a lot of copper, especially when there's a low ratio of sodium to potassium. Now, zinc and vitamin C, which are both excellent nutrients, of course, and needed by many people, those will lower copper. That's one of the effects. And many people become worse if they take a lot of zinc and vitamin C if what they need is copper. I'll tell you a brief case history. A friend's mother was scheduled for heart surgery, for a valve replacement. She was in bad shape, couldn't walk around even. She was bedridden. And actually, she ended up at the Atkins Clinic in New York. Dr. Atkins, maybe you know, is a cardiologist and has a large staff of physicians there. They sent me her hair. Her son sent me her hair, and she was a fast oxidizer with an inversion. We call it an inversion when the sodium-potassium ratio is low. And I said to him, tell me what she's taking. Well, Dr. Atkins was giving her about 10 different products, most of which had some zinc and vitamin C in them. So my advice was stop all those products, run down to the health food store, get some copper, and start feeding his mother, you know, 10 milligrams of copper a day. And do you know that within that week, she was off the list for her operation. And she has been well since, and it's been about 4 years. Now, the explanation is that they were making her worse with all that zinc and vitamin C. They were actually quite impressed and had me on their radio show, Dr. Atkins' radio show, and for a while sent me a few hair analyses, but you know, it's hard for people to change, and they have their ways of doing things. And when someone's got heart problems, they give them the vitamins for heart people and so forth. And so they didn't really continue to follow up. But it was an interesting case, and I've had several like that. Okay. Now, another question is all this related to the Chinese concepts of yin and yang? And the answer to that is a very definite yes. This was first brought to my attention by an acupuncturist who had learned the hair analysis, David Nichols in Los Angeles. And he had done some studies on his patients where he did the acupuncture diagnosis and then he did the hair mineral test. And knowing all these principles that I have described, he was able to find that, in fact, the assessment by hair analysis matched very well the pulse and tongue diagnosis that he did with acupuncture. And this, when I first heard it, was just amazing to me. Dr. Eck had told me many years before that the science that this nutrition was closest to was acupuncture, that it's about balance and it's about, these subtle qualities similar to what is done in acupuncture. And I didn't really understand what he meant at that time. I didn't really understand the connection. But then I began working with an acupuncturist. I was teaching him. And so we would go over his patients, and he would tell me what the pulses showed, and we would go over the hair tests. And again, I found the same thing. I found that a lot of the terminology, which sounds sort of esoteric in acupuncture terminology, things like yang rising and deficient yin and other things, I could identify and correlate with patterns on a hair mineral test. And his observation was that the hair test was much easier to identify, actually, than the pulses often, and that the results were often better. Now, that's not a put-down of acupuncture. It's just that this hair analysis is a Western science, and it is more geared to the peculiar problems of Western mankind in the early 21st century. Acupuncture, while it's a wonderful science, is 10,000 years old and may not be geared quite as much to some of our needs today. Obviously, it still is effective for many things. Also, David Nichols analyzed the herbs that he was using. He had them analyzed at the hair analysis laboratory for content and found, oddly enough or interestingly enough, that many of the herbs that he was using matched the mineral content of the products that were recommended for the same condition. In other words, the acupuncture people were using herbs that accomplished, you know, or at least attempted to accomplish very similar things to the minerals and the vitamin products that were being recommended that had been figured out, the glandulars and all the rest of them, for the various patterns and conditions found on a hair analysis. So this was very exciting, and it is. It's quite amazing. And so what we find is that the bodies today are mostly very, very yin.
This is because not only are they exhausted, but there are some peculiar things in this time. The toxic chemicals are all, almost all of them are extremely yin. The toxic metals tend to cause a yin condition. Radiation, which is new since World War II, is extremely yin and affects all the bodies. Nobody is exempt. The stuff is just blowing around the world. We are not aware of how much we are affected, but it is affecting everyone. A lot of it has not been told to the public, but there was a lot of accidents in Russia. They were probably the sloppiest. And then we've got, you know, power plant leakage. We've got medical use of radiation, you know, for isotopes, for various things. And there's a lot of things, all the, you know, the testing fallout and all the rest. So actually, the hair analysis is an interesting way to assess the yin or yang condition. And then the therapies need to be applied in relation to that, because that's another whole system behavior. One of those therapies is the sauna therapy, which I mentioned earlier. And now I can add that sauna therapy is an extremely yang therapy. It is hot and dry, because the infrared type sauna therapy is a dry sauna. And that is what the doctor ordered for so many people today. That's why, that's one of the reasons, in my opinion at least, that it's so effective, so dramatically effective, way out of proportion to what I would expect. In the vitamin realm, it's important too, because a lot of, well, first of all, medical drugs, which people are often filled with, and as you know, they're now showing up in the water supply, so you may not be able to escape them. You drink a glass of water, you're getting heart medicine and blood pressure medicine, all kinds of stuff in there. But these things are also yin, and unfortunately, some of the older therapies, the older natural therapies, are yin, and they're not working as well in my experience. So, for example, many people ask me about juices and green drinks and fruit diets and vegetarian diets, and they're not working as well. They're not working as well. The books, I've read all those books. I used to work at a vegetarian health spa where we put people on fasts and juice diets and other things. And I noticed that the results were disappointing, but I hadn't a clue as to why, because the books were so convincing. But now I do know. It's because the bodies have changed. They're much sicker. Dr. Paul Eck was very aware of that, and he was very interested in tailoring these programs to the specific things that are going on in the population right now. We have to give up a lot of old theories and concepts and belief systems and work with what is actually happening to the bodies today. And one of those things that's happening is they're very yin in Chinese medicine. That's the slow oxidation principle. And you'll see that's the majority, the large majority of the population. Some people's practices, by the way, they seem to attract more of the fast oxidizer patients, but so many of them are what we call temporary fast, and in a few months, and sometimes it'll take a few years, they shift around and become slow oxidizers as well. Very well. On the tape that we have remaining, I'm going to go through a couple of cases because it's illustrative. And I'm going to use cases that are in my book, Nutritional Balancing and Hair Mineral Analysis, because that way, if you would like to see the actual charts, they're there. The first one is a little boy at age 2 named Jonan. And this boy was what we call him hyperkinetic, ADHD. Today you'd call it that. This case was a number of years ago before they, were using those terms quite so freely. And what's interesting about it is it's an obvious fast oxidizer chart. The calcium and the magnesium are very, very low, 14 and 2. The sodium and the potassium began very high, 140 and 99. This is a typical or sort of classic fast oxidizer chart. And the body goes into fast oxidation. It's a fight or flight response.
it dumps out calcium, magnesium, and zinc. And by the way, this boy's zinc was 3, normal's 20. I should add the normals. The calcium was 14, normal at 40. Magnesium was 2, normal is 6. Sodium is 140, normal's 25. And potassium at 99, normal at 10. So the calcium, magnesium, very low, like a quarter of normal. The sodium and potassium are something like 6 times normal. Actually, the potassium is more like 10 times normal. Calcium, magnesium, and zinc we call the sedative elements. The zinc on this boy was 3, normal is 20, so that's extremely low. So he was missing the sedative elements, and this is exactly what the body does in the fight or flight response. It gets rid, it literally, you urinate out calcium, magnesium, and zinc. The body gets geared up to fight or flight. It goes into a hyper-alert state, you know, a hyper-irritable state, which is appropriate if you have to run very fast or fight or something like that. But this boy, unfortunately, these children live in this state all the time, or a lot of the time, and as a result, this little boy was called the Holy Terror. He just was practically uncontrollable. If his mother let him loose for a few minutes in my office, the books would be scattered all over the place, taken off the shelves, and everything was just in complete disarray. This child could not sit still for an instant. And these children, not only that, but calcium and magnesium we call the buffer elements, and he has very, very little. So get these children around, or put these children around other children, and they get even worse because they're hypersensitive. Again, that's part of the fight or flight response, you know, sort of like if you are looking out for tigers and lions and you're walking through the jungle, you want to be in a hyper alert state. And that's how this child was. Now, when the calcium, magnesium get very low like this, they get replaced by toxic metals. And sure enough, on this test, the lead, which is supposed to be, it really should be less than 0.1, is 1.4, so 10 times normal. The mercury, which should be 0.05, is 0.5, or 10 times normal. And the cadmium, which should be 0.01, is 0.1, or 10 times normal. So the toxic metals, cadmium and lead, certainly replace calcium. Lead replaces calcium in the bones. Cadmium can replace calcium in certain enzymes and things like this. And they replace magnesium, too. So in addition to being deficient in the sedative minerals, this boy had these neurotoxins in there. And lead is well known to be associated with hyperactive behavior. Even a small amount of lead will reduce IQ and is highly associated with ADHD. Cadmium is heavily associated with antisocial behavior. They've done hair analysis on a number of these serial murderers, and they all have high cadmiums and high leads. Mercury is associated with emotional symptoms, dramatic emotional symptoms. In addition, this boy had high aluminum, and that also can affect cognition. Anyway, the boy did turn around, and it didn't take that long. We had to change his diet. He had to go on the fast oxidizer diet, which is to eat a lot of fat and to reduce the carbohydrates dramatically. And he was given the supplements for the fast oxidizer, which include a lot of calcium and magnesium. It includes zinc. It includes a lot of copper. It includes inositol and choline. Choline is very calming. You could use GABA also. And he had to stay off of all the vitamins that give you energy, a lot of vitamin C and B and others. Now, what's interesting is on a retest, that was a year later, it's interesting because he's still a very fast oxidizer. Now, his calcium had gone up to 24, but that's still too low. His sodium and his potassium had gone up dramatically. From the sodium had been 140, it went up to 232. And the potassium from 99 went up to 139. So it's tricky, the progression and the way the body undoes these things is not a linear thing, and this has to do with retests and the importance of retesting. But it is a matter of following the body, and he remained on a program, and the program was altered to take into account these changes, and his mother said he was like a different child. His toxic metals, by the way, did begin to come down. A year later, his mercury was down in half, and his cadmium was almost half. His aluminum, interestingly, went shooting up, and when a toxic metal goes up on a retest, when a person's on a program, it indicates the body is actively eliminating a lot of that metal at that time. The other thing this young boy showed was a low ratio of sodium to potassium. Emotionally, that's associated with resentment, frustration, and hostility, and fatigue as well. In other words, a lot of these children who are hyperactive and who just wear you out, they're actually tired underneath all that energy, but they can't stop. It's almost as though it's like a car with the gas pedal stuck, you know? It doesn't mean that the car's in great shape, it just means it can't stop. And the toxic metals, if they get into the pituitary gland, they get into the thyroid gland, they're just on, and they're unable to stop, and so they manifest these behaviors. The next case is a case of failure to thrive syndrome, delayed development. And this one's interesting because this child, whose name was Chandra, had a genetic defect. I think it was chromosome 34. And she had mongoloid-type features, but much worse than Down syndrome. She had seizures. She was hardly growing. She was about a year old, and she was the size of a newborn. She was very lethargic. The prognosis was very poor. They said that the child would really never get very far with this particular chromosome defect. And I didn't really hold out much hope for her. The mother had taken this child to a number of doctors in different countries with no help. But I don't usually reject patients just because I don't think I can help them, unless I'm sure I can't help them. And I didn't know in this case, and I decided I would help the woman. An interesting thing about this case is that the mother at the time was on welfare, had no money, and yet she really fought for this child. She begged and borrowed and scrounged and did as much as she could. And the child did very well. I was actually amazed. Now, the child's hair test showed some interesting things. What is most notable about it, on Chandra, the failure to thrive case, is that the sodium to potassium ratio was extremely low. Sodium is 25, which is right on the nose as far as where it's supposed to be. Potassium was 56, which is off the scale, extremely low. And the ratio, therefore, is less than half, less than 0.5. The ratio should be 2.5. That's called the vitality ratio. The child had another pattern, which is a low calcium-magnesium ratio, and when you see that together, it's called a double inversion. In other words, it reinforces the low sodium-potassium ratio, which is very low vitality, and it's not a good sign at all. In addition, this child had extremely low zinc at 5 and extremely low trace minerals. Zinc is absolutely required for growth, by the way. Zinc is needed for protein synthesis, and in Egypt there are zinc-deficient dwarfs because of their diet. Zinc is very, very critical. In addition, this child showed elevated lead, elevated mercury, extremely elevated cadmium, elevated aluminum, elevated nickel. The mother had not been particularly healthy when she had this child, and by the way, that's what we find. After all, this child is only 1 year old, had probably been breastfed for the most part, and here she is way out of balance and loaded with toxic metals. Well, you know the only place, practically speaking, that she could have gotten them, because this was a good mother, was from the mother from birth. And I wish that everyone who focuses so much on genetic this and genetic that and all that would look at this, because we realize that a lot of problems are what we call congenital. That means present at birth, but not necessarily inherited. It's a very fine line at times. There is a term now for when the genetic expression is affected. Nutrients are needed to turn on genes, and a very, very important one, and they know that zinc is very necessary to prevent birth defects, but a very important one is zinc. This child not only had an extremely low zinc at 5, but had a very high cadmium, 9 times normal, and cadmium, we know, replaces zinc. So her zinc level was extremely low, very, very low. And so it's not surprising that there was a problem with genetic expression and certainly with development and growth. Now, what happened was, much to my surprise and certainly to the mother, this child began growing like a weed when I put her on a program that was appropriate for this metabolic type. And for it was a fairly simple program, and on a retest, while her ratios actually got worse, her sodium potassium got worse, and you must follow the body on this. That's the thing. It's sometimes things look worse, but her zinc improved dramatically, her cadmium dropped in half, her lead dropped, her mercury dropped, and she was off and running. And now, although she still has disability, she actually ended up at ASU, Arizona State University, at the age of 15, because she got bored in school. So she has done very well. The final case is a case of schizophrenia. And, you know, not all these cases do as well, because a person has to follow the diet and the lifestyle and get the supplements, and sometimes there are overriding factors, whether they be emotional or structural or something else. But this case was an 18-year-old girl in the Camelback Mental Hospital in Phoenix, and somehow a hair analysis was run, and they got it to me. She had a 41 copper. Copper is normally 2.5, and that is associated with psychosis. I went into the hospital. I talked to her. She was seeing demons climbing the walls behind me. She had tried to commit suicide several times. The doctor said she'd never leave the institution. She was on Thorazine. They were not doing well with her at all. I talked to the cook. We changed her diet around, put her on some supplements, and that's basically it. And within 2 years, this girl was back in high school. Within 6 months, she was able to be off all psychiatric care. And she called me several years later and was doing a book report on something and wanted some information and was doing very well. Now, that not all cases are this sort of clean cut and simple in a way, because this happened fairly quickly. But there are tremendous benefits to be had by examining the mineral balance and sticking to the system and not just trying random supplements and random diets and then everything that comes along. The success was due to sticking with the system. So I hope this illustrates that this is a real science. This is not a sort of a fad thing or it's certainly not some fraudulent idea. I don't know where people kind of get that, except that they don't read too much. They're not well informed. And the potential is very, very wonderful for many conditions, both physical and emotional. I'm happy to help anyone get started in learning this science. It takes a while. It took me about 4 years. There were no books or tapes on it at that time. I was just picking Dr. X's brain, basically, and working with my own patients. But I'm happy to help people, direct people to resources and help them get experience so that it becomes easier and easier as you go along. Well, that will complete this two-tape series on hair analysis, and that'll be the end of this tape.